Hi, welcome to the first Podmag of 2014. I'm Karen Foley, and at this point, we'd usually hear from Dave Middleton, but unfortunately, I don't know where he is.
Oh, hi, Karen. Ah, good. You haven't started yet.
Well, actually, Dave, I have. Anyway, where have you been? What's going on with this beard? Movember's well and truly over now.
Oh, I just had to have a quick shower before we got started.
What, didn't you have one before you left?
I haven't been home yet.
What, today?
No, since the last time we've recorded.
But Dave, that was before Christmas. What happened? Right, have a lovely Christmas, Dave. I'm off. See you in the new year.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, Karen. I'll just pack up here and then I'm off to Middleton Towers. Why won't this open? It seems to be locked. Help! Help!
So, you were locked in here the whole time. How did you survive?
It was tough, Karen, very tough. But you know what? The show must go on. So what's happening on this edition?
Well, actually, we've got loads of exciting things coming up this year.
OK. Well, let's tell our listeners about our upcoming training workshops.
Now, hopefully, everybody listening...
Both of you.
We have lots of listeners now, Dave. And hopefully, they're all looking forward to the Student Connections Conference.
Yes, it's going to be the biggest event of 2014.
But over the holidays, a couple of students contacted me to say that they liked the idea of the conference, but they were nervous about getting more involved.
Well, I can understand that, Karen. I know a lot of students think that we all find doing presentations really easy, but I still get nervous myself whenever I'm doing a paper at a conference, or even doing this.
Absolutely, Dave. And that is precisely why we are going to have the Activate workshops.
Activate? What's that all about?
Right, well, we had this idea that students have loads of creativity and ideas about social sciences, but they might not be very confident presenting them in public. Even people who are confident might not be so sure about doing it online.
You see, listeners, I'm locked in a cupboard for a couple of weeks and all these new ideas have suddenly appeared.
So we thought it would be a great idea if students and staff could get together in a safe online environment to explore whether they really want to get more involved in the conference.
Will everybody who comes on the Activate programme have to be a presenter then? I can imagine that might put a few people off.
No, of course not. Nobody will be forced to take part. All you have to do at this stage is to sign up for an hour session to find out how you can get involved.
Oh, okay. That sounds a bit less scary. So it's an hour online to find out what you could possibly do at the conference, but you're under no obligation.
That's right, Dave. We'll be running the Activate workshops throughout January and February.
So what kind of things will students be able to do, Karen?
That's one of the exciting things, Dave. At the conference, they might present a paper, design a poster, be a blogger, or make a podcast or a short video. Or they might chair a session. The possibilities really are endless.
But again, Karen, I think some students may be worried that they can't do any of these things.
Of course they will. But that is what the workshops are for. If you're interested but not so sure, then come along to the Activate sessions and find out what it's all about and we can take it from there. There really is absolutely no obligation.
Sounds great. Actually, I might come along myself.
You better. You're running them. Didn't you see that message from the Dean?
Oh no, the Dean.
What's the matter, Dave?
Do you remember we asked the students to send us questions for the Dean?
Yes. What did you do with them?
I think I might have had to eat them on Christmas Day. I had no food in here. I'd already finished that half-eaten mince pie that was in the bin.
Oh, Dave.
Well, it was nice, actually. No, hold on. What's this? Here's a list of questions.
Where are you going now?
I'm off to talk to the Dean. See you in a few minutes.
Poor Dave. Trapped in here for the whole of Christmas. And listeners, Dave has been very upset at the lack of emails. So come on, drop us an email to podmag@open.ac.uk. Hold on though. This door doesn't have a lock. So how could Dave have been locked in here?
Okay, I'm in the faculty headquarters. I've managed to slip past the Dean's private security detail and I'm outside his office. Damn, I wish I'd worn a tie now.
Come in.
Oh, good morning, Kevin.
Morning, Dave.
Happy New Year to you.
And Happy New Year to you too. Hope you had a good festive season.
I did indeed, and you?
I did too, yes, but we're back at work now.
We are indeed, and we're here today to talk about some questions that have been submitted for the PodMag by some of our students. So thanks very much for agreeing to do it. And we have a really good one to get us underway. This is from Kat Underwood, and Kat wants to know, when you were young and were dreaming of what you wanted to be when you grew up, did you picture where you are now, or was it another profession calling your name?
Well, when I was young, when I was at school, I had really no idea what I wanted to do. And I left school when I was 17. And my first job was working as a storeman in an electrical wholesale company.
And did you ever, at any point in that journey, have a dream that you would one day be the Dean of Social Sciences?
No, I don't think I ever imagined that until fairly recently, actually, yes.
Now, we had a number of students asking a very similar question. Lynn Blundell, Darrell Bauer, Nikki Harrison and Marag Allen-Campbell all wanted to know what's going on at the moment with regards to the postgraduate curriculum in social sciences.
Yes, I know this is a question that a lot of students have been asking us. And what I can say is that, yes, we plan to relaunch a postgraduate curriculum in the near future, particularly in the areas of psychology and criminology.
Okay, just to keep us focused on the current curriculum, Al Milne has asked, could we have greater linkage between modules?
That's a very good question, Al. And we're approaching that in a number of different ways. As you probably know, we are doing a number of things to think about how modules link up and how they relate to each other within qualifications. Certainly that in some cases, for example, in psychology and the new psychology degree QO7 will have a greater degree of linkage within its core modules. The other ways in which we try and sort of get students to think about their qualification rather than just their module is through things like the qualifications online sites, where we try to give students who are studying for a particular qualification an opportunity to sort of think about and look at the kind of questions that cut across their modules.
Excellent. Well, that question about the use of different opinions does kind of lead rather nicely into a question we got from Karen Bowler, which is, do you think Max Weber's fact-value distinction is still relevant today?
Oh, gosh. Now, that's a question I probably haven't thought about for 20 years. Max Weber, for those who don't know, was a sociologist, social scientist, really writing in Germany sort of at the very end of the 19th century and into the 20th century. He's one of the sort of the key sort of figures within sociology. And he developed a view that what we were seeing within modern societies was an increasing emphasis on rationality as a way of organising life. And he believed that modern societies were characterised by different spheres of life, economics, politics, science, law, and so on, that had their own take on rationality. But he didn't believe that one still shouldn't have a value orientation, that one should still sort of, you know, be orientated towards studying things because of one's values, but then should study it and try and understand it objectively. So there've always been a range of different perspectives around this. And I think it's fair to say that the long tradition that the Open University Social Science faculty has had has been one that would be sort of at some variance to Weber. We've always prided ourselves on what I would guess would be described in broad terms as critical social science. We want to sort of understand it and sort of see some of the problems there, some of the ways in which power operates, some of the inequalities and so on. And it's important for social scientists, we've believed in that one should engage with the world in that kind of way. So I think that there are many people who would say that while Weber had some useful things to say about sort of how one treats facts objectively and uses evidence to understand the world, that one can't always divorce that from one's values and one's beliefs.
Okay, so that was quite a longish answer.
Yes, as I say, it's 20 years since I've had to think about that kind of stuff, so that's a very interesting one.
Okay, well, let's just follow that up then, because I think you probably used around about 50 words.
Okay.
Being generous. Two people actually asked the same question, Mandy Claire Worrell and Jen Genosaurus Wake, I think the Genosaurus might be a nickname, asked the same question, which is kind of relevant to what you just said. So why do all social scientists use 50 words when 5 would do?
It's probably because social scientists are trying to sort of understand the world from a particular perspective, with a particular training, with a particular way of approaching things that requires them to use a specialist language.
Okay, now Dean Markham, who says he's a sociologist and a teacher, says, I don't half spend a large proportion of my time explaining both what I do and what social science is all about. What do you spend most of your working time doing?
I would like to spend more of my time explaining what social science is to people. I seem to spend most of my time in management meetings, not in the swimming pool, as I think you've alluded to in a previous podcast. We don't do that. But I do get some opportunities to go outside and meet with people in other areas. We are always looking to think about developing how we engage with the wider community. But alas, most of it is I'm chained to the desk or to the computer, or I'm in a committee meeting.
Final question then. These have been really good questions.
They have.
I think we should thank the students for that.
Indeed.
This is from Jane Ross, who says, if you were on Desert Island Discs, what would be the one track, the one book, and the luxury that you couldn't live without?
Oh, gosh. I'd have to think about that one a bit. The track, and this is probably going to be a bit obscure for many people, would be No Side to Fall In by the Raincoats. Well, the novel that perhaps I've read more times than any other is The Crying of Lot 49 by Thomas Pynchon. As to the luxury item, I'm on a desert island here. I think I'd want the treasure map with the X marked on it as my luxury item.
Very good. Okay, thank you very much for those answers, and thanks to the students for providing the questions. Kevin Hetherington, thanks very much.
Thank you, Dave.
Wow, those security guards, they've got no sense of humour.
What have you done now?
Nothing. I overheard one of them say he was thinking of packing it in to live off his wits, and all I said was that half a living is better than no living at all.
So they took objection to being called half-wits. What happened then?
Well, they chased me down here. But they stopped when we reached that sign on the stairs that says unfit for human habitation.
Well, Dave, that's all we have time for this week. Just one thing, though.
Anything, Karen. What was it?
Could you just pass me the key to the door? We don't want you getting locked in again.
Sure. Oh, that's strange. Where's the lock?
There isn't one, Dave. You weren't locked in here. You just overslept again.
Anyway, listener, don't forget to keep in touch and sign up for the Activate workshops. Well, apparently, you'll be able to meet me.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the PodMag. Catch you next time.
The PodMag!